Welcome back to Wild On. Today, we are starting a very exciting new format. We finally get to talk to my co-host, Silesia Sparks. Then we segue into some sleazy tea, blind items, gossip about professional independent wrestlers. And then we get into our interview with today's guest, Xenia. But if you want to skip ahead, click below in the description. Hey, what's up? This is your girl, Taylor Wilde. Welcome back to Wild On Season 6, the podcast where you get the insider's view of the weird, wild world of wrestling and witchcraft on Wednesdays. Most importantly, to my left, the Veronica to my Betty of professional wrestling, my homegirl from Etobicoke, Silesia Sparks. What's up, bitch?
What's up, bitch?
Okay, Silesia's back on dating sites.
My life.
I am off the dating side.
Oh, man. Must be nice.
Okay, but we know. Yes. I'm at the love of my life on Hinge. Yes. So.
So I'm on fucking Hinge.
So Hinge, throw a sponsor to Silesia Sparks.
Yeah, please.
So she can have the paid alterations of the because we don't want the hitting of the fishing of the
height fishing, the hat fishing, the cat fishing.
Okay, that hat fishing though, that got me a few times. I'm not gonna lie.
Really,
yeah.
I will go through as many photos of it as I can. If I don't see one of you without a hat, I'm sorry.
Here's the thing, don't fucking judge women for using filters.
Yeah, but also like we have nothing wrong with bald people.
No, bald no. Is bald is beautiful, but just show me that you have You're bald. Like, do half photos, but also do your sexy bald photo.
I would like to see what
photo.
I'm going to see.
100%. Don't give me a surprise. It's already a surprise enough. You are a stranger. Surprise. I got to go meet a stranger.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need
it. Oh, man. I got to meet strangers.
We don't like small talk to begin with. I don't give a shit what your favorite color is. I don't give a shit what your favorite movie is.
I'm already having a panic attack right now. Oh my god. Okay. I'm doing great, everybody. Life is great.
You are killing it. Don't let anyone tell you different.
Thank you.
When was the last time you were on the dating apps?
Last year.
When last year?
Okay. It was December. Shit. I quit in December.
Merry Christmas.
Well, not really.
You've done a lot of work on yourself.
100%.
And this is probably like the longest time you've been single.
I've been single like forever now, and I fucking love it.
Yes.
And now I just am too scared to like. Do I want to get into that shit again?
Yeah. But you're in your ruthless era. It's not about being scared, but like.
I'm scared of fucking. I'm sorry. I'm
scared. Okay, where are we dating in the world of Hinge?
So it, like initially we started off in the Bronx in
New York.
Like a little bit of spice to my life.
But they saw you were in Toronto, right?
No. They think I'm from their area, wherever that may be.
You don't know. You just, okay.
Yeah, but the floodings were happening in New York at the moment, so I didn't have much luck.
Because everyone was busy.
It wasn't a me problem. It was actually flooding.
Okay, fair. Okay.
But because I thought it was a me problem, like, okay, maybe I'm just not their demographic type. Like, maybe they're not into this.
So I
moved.
Okay.
To Texas.
Good.
And let me tell you.
We love this.
We love Texas.
Yes.
We fucking love Texas.
Yes. Give me a reason to move.
I wish I just did stick with Texas, but I felt bad.
Why?
Because being the good, honest woman that I am.
That's how I would describe you, 100%.
I am. I felt bad initiating a conversation with people that I just was never going to meet.
You think every motherfucker on that site is like leading with honesty first?
That's my problem.
Just be like, I don't know. I like Texas. I'm from Toronto. Fly me out.
Ew, I can't even do that. Like, no, I can't.
Okay, we're just going to get you a flight, drop you off somewhere in Texas.
Just drop me off in Texas and I'll just knock on a stranger.
I've got a great idea. As a firefighter, I think we should find one of those baby boxes at the fire hall and we'll just stick you in the box.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, just like, I can't find a man. It's a very serious matter. Thank God there's those baby boxes, but also find Silesia, man. Okay, what was the last date you went on?
It was a restaurant, and it was like a rooftop restaurant.
Okay, okay.
And it was nice, but it was like cold.
Okay.
But they had heating, so like that was
the
most impressive part of the date.
We need to talk about your hierarchy of needs.
But also, like, I hate the cold, so
true.
If you know me,
true.
You know I fucking love hotness.
True.
So when I'm hot, I'm happy.
True. Okay. So if you bring the heat.
You take me on a date and then bring me like a little heater.
Or a heated blanket even?
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah. And that's it. It's cold in Canada. You don't know what it's like out
it's
here.
True.
These people do not understand what we have to go
no,
through.
No, streets are real. That's why we're hard as fuck. Okay, let's spill some tea. Are you ready to spill some tea? Are you ready?
Are you ready?
So easy tea. Okay. Story time, bitch.
Let's go, babe.
Once upon a time.
In a land far away.
I wish it was far away, but it's in Toronto.
Right here.
In a land where we're from.
Too close.
There was a place that we used to go to sharpen our skills of the wrestling. To perform sometimes, once a month. There was an instructor, Brad.
Brad.
We'll call him Brad, okay?
Brad.
Brad was the instructor of a program in Toronto that also did productions of shows. We'll call it that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Brad is married.
Yes.
With children. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have known him since I was 18 years old. And this man, since I have known him, has preached about loyalty. Has preached about respect,
hustle,
loyalty, fucking,
honesty.
And as, he's basically John Cena.
Basically. This man is John Cena.
He is John Cena. You know, I mean, like, this is what I'm saying.
Almost. Not quite.
He is someone who would also not only control his kingdom, but would try to control the women in his kingdom who were friends. Like, I'm speaking from personal experience.
Yeah.
Someone that was like, you shouldn't date within our community. It will fucking ruin your career. This, that, and the other thing.
Don't eat where you sleep. What is it?
Don't shit where you eat. And wrestling is a that sport. One. Wait, what did you say?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sleazy Sparks. This is my friend. I brought her.
Here for entertainment?
Question mark. Back to Brad, bitch. He has a female student in his community with his production.
Angelina.
We call her Angelina. Okay. Angelina is in this world. Angelina already has a boyfriend also in this world. We'll call him Justin, okay?
Justin brought Angelina into this world.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, obviously, we're changing the names to protect all of those who are innocent until proven guilty. But motherfuckers are guilty. So we're just being polite at this point.
We're such nice, we're good, honest women.
We're good, honest women.
We're the best.
But you know what? We're just getting fucking unhinged because fuck this shit. What does politeness get you in this business anymore?
I don't know.
It doesn't. And like,
I wouldn't know.
We're just out here trying to get canceled anyways.
I'm surprised we're not. This episode.
Give it time.
Episode 7.
Season 7. Then we got Angelina and Justin. A cute little couple. They get into this program. Mm-hmm. They're doing these shows and shit.
Basically, what's her face? Angelina and Brad had been having a little thing behind, what's his face?
Justin.
Justin and Brad's little wifey. But anyways, I guess there has been a little bit of exchanges of text messages, which led to a little bit of exchanges of vaginal and penisness.
That's a technical term by Silesia Sparks. Yeah. Exchanging of the penis and the vagina.
I'm doing great in the dating world, guys.
It's fine. We're living. We are giving
I'm
and
learning.
Okay, but here's the bottom line, though. Okay, we're not telling this story to just spill tea and be assholes for clickbait.
I want to.
Okay, we are assholes. But, like, I'm also wanting to protect younger women in this business who, like, okay, doesn't matter if you're 21, 30, 40. This is a world that's fucked up. Like, any entertainment. You're just trying to make it. You don't know your elbow from your asshole most of the time.
I still don't know my elbow.
I've seen it. She doesn't know.
Is that my
That's mostly an elbow.
It's my your asshole.
But no, legit. I want to protect the person in this story who is probably going to get the most flack, because women get the most flack. Let's be real here, right? You're never the fucking hero. You're always the slut. Do I think this person made a good decision? No. But you know what? I was thinking about this the other day.
Is it her fault?
No, it's not her fault. She was like trauma bonded into a situation.
Groomed into the situation as well.
Yeah. And that's what I want to say. Yes, we are exposing this story. Yes, most of the wrestlers who are watching this know what the fuck we're talking about, and you're welcome. But like, for people that don't know, this is a classic case of someone in position of authority and power in wrestling taking advantage of someone young.
Someone who just doesn't know any better. Someone who's new. Somebody who thinks that they're being guided and taken care of.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, she's gonna be looking back in a few years and be like, fuck, like,
what did I do?
Yeah. If you're, I'm gonna preach this till the day I fucking die. If you're unhappy in a relationship, don't let the other person suffer and do shit behind their back. Have some fucking integrity in yourself and get out of the relationship first.
Yeah. So it's just unfortunate. A very public affair happened in our little community. And the Brad of the situation tried to gaslight everybody and deflect from the situation instead of just admitting fault and saying, you know what, whatever, we fucked up.
Piece of shit, and this is here's the thing. Don't brag about it. You haven't done anything cool, right?
Right.
So to my understanding, his students were asking how to work as a heel.
A bad guy. Yeah. What is the persona? What would you tap into to be the best heel bad guy?
Right. And this person, Brad, says, well, imagine walking into a bar with your ex-best friend's ex-girlfriend on your fucking arm, knowing that you stole him from her and you just don't give a fuck. I mean, that just shows what kind of fucking person you are. And to be honest, if you can proudly say that, then fuck you.
100%. And you know what? I know that once this goes out on the interwebs, there's going to be a lot of like, no, that's not it. Like, we're adults. You don't know the timelines. But you know what? I am 100% messy, but I am also fucking honest. Mm-hmm. Be messy. Be honest. Be out there with your messy honesty, because wrestling is fucking messy. And just don't judge everybody and fucking gaslight the people.
And if you are going to judge everybody, make sure your fucking record's clean.
Yeah. And that's it for Sleazy Tea this week. Thank you for tuning in.
Sleazy Tea.
Today's guest is not a professional wrestler. However, she is a wrestling journalist and a presenter. And homegirl actually probably knows more about wrestling than we do.
Yeah.
And we're wrestlers. She has her own show on YouTube called Xenia Did That, where she has interviewed some of the biggest names in professional wrestling, just like us.
Mm-hmm. She's like interviewed Dolph Ziggler, Nyla Rose.
Yeah, he's pretty cute. Ladies and gentlemen, my girl, Xenia. So much for taking the time out to do my podcast.
I'm so excited.
It's so lovely to meet you, even though it's just in the lovely world of Zoom.
Hopefully we, you know, translate it to the real world sometime.
Of course we will. Okay. So obviously I've gotten to know you through your social media presence, which is incredible. You're doing something very different than it has been done. You focus very much on professional wrestling, but with a female aesthetic, and you tote about inclusion and wanting to really deliver to an audience of, you know, everybody. Can you tell mm-hmm. us your story? How did you get started in the social media world? How did wrestling become integrated with all of that? Please tell me your story.
Yeah, I've been a wrestling fan for a super long time, for about 16 or 17 years now, I want to say. So wrestling has always been the backdrop to everything else that I've ever done or been doing.
Okay.
But with social media, I started my channel, I think, about 5 years ago. And that's about when I started working on my Instagram as well. And it's definitely an effort of combining different things.
Sure.
Because feminism is definitely also something that is a huge part of my life and that I really, really believe in. But then also one day I just realized that, you know, wrestling is not all that there is to me, and that I also like traveling. I also like fashion. I also like food. I also look a certain way. That's a big part of how I present too, because people are so used to the stereotype that any kind of combat / contact sport is the dude's thing, and it's the
sure.
boys' locker room, whatever mentality type of thing, which it's so not. And still to this day, when I get comments or messages that say, oh, you're a girl who likes wrestling, that's so unusual, I make a point to tell them, no, it's not unusual. I yeah. have many beautiful friends, creators, fans, workers who do this amazing thing and who are as in love with the business as you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I digress. Like I said, I started my channel 5 years ago, and it was just a moment of clarity where I was like, hey, I like social media, I like doing this, I have a formal education in journalism, I have a master's degree in communications, so why not put the two together and put the passion that I had for the bigger part of my life with something that I think I'm skilled enough to do, and somewhere that I have things to say and something to show the world. So that's how XDT was born.
And it's incredible, because that's a short amount of time in the world of social media, 5 years, and you have over 300,000 followers on Instagram. You've had 1 million viewers on your YouTube channel. Like, that is no small feat. A lot of people have degrees in that world and they're not able to combine all the things. What do you think for you set you apart, or how did, like, you are basically living my dream. What I want to do is I want to translate my world of wrestling in the ring to being more of a journalist, more of doing this together. So what do you think differentiated you between you and everybody else with the same education?
You know what? I think it's honestly about putting yourself out there, as cliche as it maybe sounds. But it might sound cliche, but it's easier said than done.
Sure.
Because even for me, that's still a work in progress. And that's still something that I struggle with, honestly. Because especially as women, we are not comfortable mm-hmm. offering ourselves to the world, right? We
True.
Are not comfortable being like, hey, can I hold this space? Hey, can I be here? Hey, do you want my help here? Like, it's not something that we're comfortable doing.
Right.
So still to this day, it's something that I really, really have to work on. And sometimes when I, you know, see someone doing an event that I would have wanted to do, or getting a booking that I would have wanted to get, instead of being jealous, instead of being mad about it, I like to sit down and ask myself, what did they do to get there that I didn't do?
Right.
And it's not a pleasant conversation to have with yourself.
It's hard.
A lot of the times, it just, like, it circles back to it pretty much being your fault, for the lack of a better word, being
yeah.
your fault that you didn't do A, B, and C. But it's also a good lesson to, you know, do A, B, and C next time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very much about putting yourself out there, offering your help, also accepting help, which also can be tough. And it's definitely about building a community. One thing that my father has actually always told me is that people love helping people. You think you might be a burden, you think you might be annoying, but if you come to someone who is bigger than you or that you admire in the industry and you ask them for advice and you ask them for help, they're not going to be mad.
Mm.
They're probably even going to be happy to help you. Like, even I have people like that in the industry, like, say, Sean Ross Sapp or RJ City, who are my good friends and who are my mentors pretty
okay.
much in this space. And I come to them with questions. I come to them with my worries, and they help me. Of course, it's, you know, it's important to have a healthy balance to it. Like,
of
obviously
course.
Don't like just leech onto people. I guess that goes without saying. But I think it's definitely proactively putting yourself out there, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I find your journey very inspiring.
Thank you.
How did you, you know, was the growth pretty linear over the 5 years, or did you have a big influx in the beginning? Like, because social media is such a thing that you, you know, you can go viral and you go from 0 to 1 million overnight. What was your journey? Was it like 0 to 1 million, or was it more linear?
It was definitely not linear, and it's definitely somewhere where you would find yourself stuck sometimes, where you would hit plateaus, where you would hit, you know, creative crisis.
Yeah.
That happens to all of us. And yeah, there was definitely a big bump when I actually came to America and where I actually got to know people there.
Okay.
Because not many people know that I was actually doing this back in Europe for a while before I ever did anything in America.
Totally.
I was interviewing wrestlers. My first interview was actually with Ultramantis Black, which is a very cool first interview to have.
Yeah.
You know? And before I even started interviewing, which kind of was a whirlwind that kind of happened to me. I didn't initially choose to do interviews, but I grew to love interviews so much. But I would do like figure unboxings, and I would do like the older era YouTube, like top five this things, or like things to do to do this, like that kind of stuff, like 10-minute videos. But it was definitely a big bump, a big influx when I actually came to America. I got to know people, and I actually got in the American scene. And then again, when last year I did a little UK loop, when I did, I collaborated with One Pro Wrestling, and then I did the New Japan show, and that was definitely another bump. But yeah, it, like I said, it ties with me saying that it depends on where you are and how much you communicate with people. Because when a big event happens, or when you get a big like opportunity, it definitely helps your following. And with Twitter too, which now I'm banned on Twitter, and I'm working on it. I'm trying to get my Twitter back.
Oh, congratulations. I feel like getting canceled is like a real like moment in your career.
Yeah, that was something. That was an experience also. But even with that, like, it depends so much on like how much you tag people and promotions, on the hashtags that you use, on like the shows during which you put out content. It's all very, very sensitive to all those like waves like that. We can even see that right now with Impact, where they just celebrated their 1,000th episode. And MGF got a promo inspired by the Scott Steiner promo.
Right.
And Impact's social media team, being as brilliant as they are, immediately put out a video with the original promo and immediately referenced it and included it in their like top 10 moments. It's about being sensitive to the industry, and it's about like riding the waves pretty much.
So basically what you're saying is, one of the greatest growth strategies is to be in the moment and to be the first one to latch on to what's going on in the trends. And
yeah, absolutely. I would say so. And even again, even I struggle with it, because I am very much like a long form sit down content type of person. And with the rise of micro content, micro blogs, micro videos like TikTok, and the smaller format that's booming now, that's something you have to readjust yourself to, of course. And
absolutely.
I'm like, with my personality, I struggle with it, because I'm very much a let's sit down and like really go deep into your vision of the business for 35 minutes. Like that's what I am.
Right.
But you definitely have to be sensitive of what's going on, you know, right here, right now.
100%. Now, you mentioned that the MJF thing, and I saw that you were traveling. You were in London for AEW's massive event. Like,
biggest,
you know,
in history.
Oh, my goodness. You know, with TNA back in the day, we always did Wembley Arena. And to me, that was incredible. But to do the stadium, that's like, you know, that's where Freddie Mercury performed. Like, that is history. What was your experience in that event?
It was, like you said, it was crazy. It was huge. It was something that I could never even dream I'd be a part of in any way. And for me, it was a very, very full circle moment too, because I actually started watching wrestling in London, because my mom was a designer and an artist, and she had work in London, and she took me with her when I was 11 years old. And in a hotel room in London, I was flipping through the channels, and that's how I discovered wrestling. So fast forward, like I said, 17 years.
Yeah.
It's insane being like an officially accredited media at the Wembley Stadium.
Where it all began.
It's just insane. Where it all began. Yeah, wow. It's just impossible to describe. And it's something that you know, tell your grandkids that you were a part of the biggest pro wrestling show in the history of the business at the time, which I'm sure we will, with time, transcend it to and surpass that number. Yeah. But yeah, that was definitely something absolutely incredible to be a part of. And the show itself was absolutely great, just dare I say flawless. It was just amazing. It was just an experience of a lifetime.
So circling back, we mentioned, you know, I'm jokingly saying, you know, getting canceled is like a little career bump, but for our listeners who might not know what's happened, what was your reason that Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it these days, why did you get the boot?
Yeah, with Twitter/X, I'm not entirely sure what happened.
Oh, no.
Because the reason that I was given was that I was evading suspension, which I was not, because I've never been previously suspended.
Oh.
But what I think happened is I think maybe a bunch of people reported the account or, you know, something like that. I know there's a fair share of people in the fandom who dislike me for their own reasons. And, you know, I'm not ice cream to be liked by everyone. That's perfectly fine. And especially when I touch on some like very, very acute topics, you know, such as, again, inclusion, such as women's rights.
Yes.
A lot of people are, not even maliciously, uncomfortable hearing about those things, because ultimately wrestling is something that makes all of us happy, and for some people it's an escape, and for some people it's a safe haven, and for someone to come in and be like, hey, this and this could be better, hey, this and this group of people don't maybe feel as comfortable, it's, you know, it's not fun to hear. So that's why I put, you know, an emphasis on education. I'm trying as gently and as you know, as much rooted in facts and research and all that kind of stuff as I can to put information out there. I know that when I was even younger, I was way more irritable, and I was way more aggressive about those things.
Right.
But I've realized that a lot of the times it's not malicious that people disagree or that people don't want to hear it. You just have to, you know, work your way to a better world.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, you're putting yourself out there. So although I'm sure there's a bit of a persona, as we all have to have in the social media world, it's hard to not take those things personally when they come back to you, when people are being critical. How do you keep yourself grounded? Because you do have success, so you're going to have haters. That's how you know you're doing well, when people start trying to drag you down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, if you're not doing anything significant, then you're not going to get any hate. But if you're trying to put a message out, of course someone's going to hate on you. But I think I've developed somewhat of a thick skin over time.
Like, yes.
It doesn't touch me as much. And it's just, for me, again, it's about keeping this healthy balance of not letting it get to me and not getting upset by it, but also keeping in mind that even though, as we like to say, oh, it comes with the territory, it doesn't have to. Like, it's not okay that it does.
Right.
And that's why a lot of the times I like to, like, post screenshots. I like to ask my followers to report an account or to, you know, take action in any other way. Because I do feel it's important to call those people out.
Mm-hmm.
Because those trolls, for the lack of a word,
for sure,
are so used to getting away with anything. And they're so used to not getting any pushback. Because we are also told, oh, just don't pay attention. Oh, just scroll away. Oh, just don't read those. But it's not about how it affects me. It's not about how it makes me feel when I read them. It's about how it's not okay.
Right.
And I always think about how, me having somewhat of a thick skin, I'm going to be fine. But if it was a different kind of person, maybe if they read those kind of comments, they would have an entirely different reaction, and it would have a way worse impact on their mental health and on their overall well-being, you know? Because I've read some pretty heinous stuff about myself on the internet. I've read, like, direct, like, detailed descriptions of how people want to sexually assault me and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it's just important to keep calling that out, and it's important that people learn that it does have repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I stand. As much as I try to not let it get to me, I try to also not pretend like it doesn't exist. It very much exists, and very much is a problem that has to be addressed.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I like your perspective, because that's how I approach life, because nothing, I feel like I've done a lot of self-work where I try not to be reactive to people, and I don't get angry with people, because it's giving them my energy. And if I'm giving them my energy, then, you know, it's coming from an unhealed place, you know.
Yeah.
So I've always thought with social media, I don't react to people because I don't want them to have that much access to me. Mm-hmm. But in life, I wouldn't let someone talk to me like that in terms of, so how do you keep that balance? Because if you could spend your whole life reacting to trolls because you've done well, you're successful, you're putting yourself out there. How do you keep the balance between who you react to and who you ignore?
It's hard. And you're so right that there should be a balance there, because even recently when I had this account on Instagram that was just like creating new accounts every time and like putting my picture as their profile picture and sending you know, like you do the printouts of that kind of thing. I kept posting the new accounts that they were creating, asking my followers to report them, and they did, and they got taken down 3 times, which is great. But then one of my like good acquaintances messaged me and went like, oh, you just have to like go and like keep reporting it every day, and you have to put like this specific reason, and you have to do it because you're the victim, quote unquote. So it's more, you know, Instagram values that more if the victim of the bullying comes forward.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I posted it to my stories. I asked my friends to report it. I reported it. And that's about as much energy as I'm going to put into it.
Perfect.
Like, I'm not as bothered by it to where I would spend days and days and days thinking about that person and giving them my energy, like you said. So you're very much right. Like, it takes a certain, like, sense of balance. And it also depends, like, sometimes when I post screenshots, sometimes I cover up the name, sometimes I don't. Mm. Because, like I said, sometimes when I think a person's just confused, or I'm just trying to, like, show an example of why something's not okay, but I don't think they personally meant it like that, I'll cover up the name. But if I think someone is being malicious, I will not cover up the name. Because, again, I think they should sense the repercussions of their actions.
Sure.
For me, again, like, I've gotten so, like, accustomed to people, like, coming after what I look like or how I talk or, you know, my opinions, and I'm fine with that. Well, not fine, but, like, I don't feel upset or angry about it.
Right.
But one thing that really gets to me is the mansplaining thing. Like, that really, really makes me mad. When someone comes into my comments or my DMs and tries to explain things to me that I know I'm more knowledgeable about than they are. Like, that's one thing that I really have to, like, take a deep breath and self-regulate. I was recently talking to someone, and it's worse when it's, like, someone you've met in real life. Because then it's, like, you can just ignore them. You can just pretend, like, it doesn't exist, you know?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you could, but it would be kind of rude a little bit. So, like, if it's an acquaintance, I would, you know, make an effort to explain. So we're talking about Lucha masks.
Okay.
And I posted a picture with Commander, who is one of my absolute favorites. Again, a good acquaintance, a great guy. I adore Commander. Everyone who knows me knows I adore Commander. So this person that I know, like, sent me my picture with Commander and went, like, so many people have been ripping off Rey Mysterio lately.
What?
That's just destroyed me. I tried to, like, explain that, you know, luchadores have different masks, and just because you think it's similar, it doesn't mean he's, you know, ripping him off in his different mask design. So this person kept arguing with me that Rey Mysterio has had, like, different mask designs throughout the years. So I was like, well, that, you know, colors, yes, textures, yes, but not a different mask design.
Correct.
So to prove their point that Rey Mysterio has had different masks, they sent me a picture of Rey Fénix. I was like, you just proved your point, but yeah, those kind of things really make me mad. We're like, why are you arguing with me if you know that I know what I'm talking about?
Right.
But yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey of self-regulation. Sure.
You're healing while regulating, while trying to exist. I get it. You're wearing all the hats. Okay. But let's talk about the origin of Xenia. Mm-hmm. Where were you born?
I was born in Moscow, Russia.
Okay.
And then I spent a good chunk of my childhood in Spain, in Mallorca, which is where I am now.
That's beautiful. You
know, where I live about, like, half of my time. So, and I'm also half Russian, half Romanian. So that's another aspect.
Wow. Okay. So that's background. Where the tough as nails exterior comes from.
Exactly. It's always so funny when people ask me, oh, where are you from? It's always such a charged question. Like, are you asking me where I live or where I'm living right now or what's my ethnicity or like, you
all
know,
of the
I
above.
Up?
I want to know all of it.
So it's all like different answers to all those questions. So yeah, I'm Russian and Romanian. I grew up in Spain and I live part-time in Spain, part-time in Orlando, Florida.
Wow. That's what a beautiful, blessed life.
I try to make the most of it.
And obviously you're fueled, like you said, by feminist rights, inclusion. You have obviously a beautiful relationship with who you are on the outside and inside. You must have had a mentor. You must have had an inspiration. What drove you to have these strong opinions and a strong sense of self?
You know what? I don't think it was specifically a person.
Okay.
Even though I do obviously admire my mother so much.
There you go.
She is the Romanian component. She's part Romanian. She's part Cossack, which is a native Russian ethnicity in the south of Russia, you know, near the Don River. And she's an incredibly strong woman. Like I said, artist, designer, and she used to be a model. And she's just this gorgeous, fierce woman.
Yes.
And obviously that was a role model to you know, grow up around. I've always wanted to be like my mom. Oh. Like down to the physical appearance, because it's so funny because I look exactly like my dad.
Okay.
But then my mom has olive skin, brown eyes, pin straight black hair. And I always wanted to be like her, to the point where when I was like an early teen, the one thing I wanted the most in the whole world was to dye my hair black. So she eventually caved and I had like black box dyed hair for like 4 years. So that's a big part of my identity. But I also think that my background and my upbringing was something that really drove me to certain conclusions, because being Eastern European and from Eastern Europe,
yes,
it's not as much of a progressive society
correct
as America is, or as just Eastern, you know, Europe is.
Yes.
And it's definitely influenced the way that I even look at feminism and the kind of feminist that I am. And some people may say they have like a bit of more of a radical approach to it. And I do, because I witnessed and I know what it's like to be a woman in a very patriarchal country.
Right.
So that was definitely something that drove me to where I am. And I was lucky enough to have an absolutely incredible group of friends back in Russia who just all happened to be extremely intelligent, beautiful, successful women.
Yeah.
So I never really felt within a friend group a pushback.
Okay.
It's never been something that was weird. It's never been something that was you know, frowned upon within my like inner circle. So that also definitely helped cultivate it, and that also definitely helped me be so outspoken about it.
Sure.
And so enthusiastic about it.
Yes, of course.
So it was definitely a weird mixture of having this incredible inner circle that was super liberal, super pro-feminist and super progressive and super accepting. In a country that's pretty much none of those things.
Right, yeah.
But it definitely helped us, like, growing up together, form opinions together, and have this beautiful female friendship, you know, that helped us cultivate the kind of people that we are. So I'm very thankful for that.
That's beautiful. And I feel like your strength obviously stems from your childhood, from your mother, who's this incredibly beautiful woman. I would love for you to send me a photo of your mom in her modeling days.
She has an Instagram.
Yes.
So, I think it's ek.gallery.
Okay.
So check it out. She's great.
Plug Mama Zinia. Beautiful. Also, I need to see your life with that box dyed black hair, because as a platinum blonde, I can't even visualize
it. It was something. It was a moment.
You have to send me a photo.
It was a product of its time. It was like 2010. So yeah.
It was living in 2010. It was very emo. You got it. Good for you. And what age did you become a platinum blonde? Because going from black to blonde is a very different lifestyle.
And it was something that I did like within like a couple months too. I was like, I was dyeing my hair black, and then I was like, I want to be a blonde. So I had to.
Your poor hair.
But it's been a while. I think I was 17, I want to say. So like 10 years, 11 years. 10 years?
Okay. Yeah, so it's been a minute.
The blonde with the side shave has definitely become a part of how I present.
Did you ever consider, as being like this lifelong wrestling fan, even though you had this journalism background, looking at you, one, you're stunning. You have such a powerful athletic presence. Did you ever think of stepping in the ring?
Do you know what? Like, if you're saying ever, like at 12 years old, probably I, you know, thought okay. about it as any fan would, but it's never been like an actual, like, serious idea or intention, really. Thank you for saying I look athletic, because I'm not.
Really? It's all a lie. It's an illusion.
It's all a lie. Don't believe what you see on the internet, kids. All a lie. I think I am pretty unathletic, actually. So for me to get in, like, somewhat of an acceptable in-ring shape, it would take a while and it would be a lot of work. Like, I've managed people before. So, like, as a manager, if it would take additional training to do a certain spot or to do, you know, a certain angle, I'm totally open to that. And okay. I've also had so many people ask me if I've ever trained that I even made a video where I did, like, one very half-assed wrestling training. It was just, like, a kind of... well, here kind of moment. It was so fun, though. It's one of my favorite videos. I think it was really fun. But no, honestly, no. Whenever someone asks me, I usually say, why would you trade a good journalist in for a bad wrestler? I just really think that wrestling is such a precarious, like, dangerous, complicated art.
Sure.
That only people who, like, cannot live off the mat should do it. So in my opinion, like, it's just a sign of respect. Like, if I don't feel a calling for that, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna meddle with that. Plus, I feel like the media part of wrestling is such an underrepresented, underappreciated part of the business. And I just feel like it's also a very important job to do. So that's where I feel in my place, and that's where I feel right, and that's where I feel, you know, like I belong and like I'm doing something of value. So that's where I want to remain. And I've actually even talked to my other, like, creator friends about this kind of stuff. And some of them have a really different perspective. And I honestly really don't get it because I'm not going to name names, obviously. But one of my creator friends did a spot for a promotion and he was, like, so excited about it, which is perfectly fine to be excited about. Yeah. Like, that's great. But then he was like, oh, like, I would think anyone would want to do it. Mm. And I said I probably, in that context, wouldn't do it because that would give people grounds to point fingers and be like, oh, she actually wants to be a wrestler and she's just doing this to get attention, which is so not the case, because that's what people tend to think a lot. And referees are also a victim of that because people think that people do reffing because they can't wrestle or because they couldn't succeed as a wrestler, which is so not the case. A referee is such an important part of any match, of any angle, of any, like, promotion. Like, it's such a cornerstone of wrestling.
Absolutely.
And to reduce it to someone who just wasn't good enough to wrestle is absolutely offensive. So I just really think that sometimes it's good to, like, kind of separate those things. Like I said, if I'm acting as a manager in a certain context, yes, absolutely, I would get a spot. But if I'm doing my job as a journalist and, you know, someone is like, oh, you should just go and train to wrestle, I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think I'm gonna do that.
That's fair. So you believe then your relation to wrestling is propping everybody up and providing a platform from your perspective.
Absolutely.
To tell their
Absolutely.
stories.
Yeah, and it's also, there's two sides of this. One is like you said, absolutely given the platform so that people can speak about things that are important and that they have experienced as workers. Mm. As an interviewer, it's my job to ask the right questions, to give them the space to talk about those things. And I've had people on my channel who have had struggles that I, as a non-worker, or I, as a white person, or I, as a cis person, or I, as a, you know, woman, that they have no idea what it's like to have them in your life. And it's my job to give them space and to give them, you know, to ask the right questions, to let them talk about it.
Right.
But then the other side of it is actually me doing analytics also. And I do think that I have a certain vision of wrestling, and I have certain ideas of, again, as pompous as it sounds, like I said, of how to make the world of wrestling a better place.
Sure.
And a more inclusive place, a more safer place, a more fun place.
Yeah.
And I absolutely believe in spreading those ideas and in sharing them, and in working with promotions also to work towards creating a better space for people in wrestling.
I hope all my wild ones enjoyed my episode and interview with the lovely Xenia today. If you enjoyed today's episode, you need to check out our archive. It's a huge back catalog. There's so many episodes, so many guests. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you can find us. I don't know how you got here, but you should stay here. So you make sure you hit subscribe and you won't miss any wild weekly content that comes out every Wednesday. So keep calm and wild on. Blessed be.